welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing right now on Sunday evening. Joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada. I don't know why you're there, Om, but whatever it is, I hope you had luck, and I know you earned it. It's our man, Om Yunglesuk.
I got last-minute tickets to New Edition Residency. I am a old-school R&B fan. I got to give a shout-out to Christina Pink, who's the sideline reporter for the Clippers, for hooking it up, and it was incredible.
Attaboy. Band McMahon joining us from Dallas, Texas. What 90s band did you see in concert this weekend?
Howdy, partners. I did not see any 90s band. Did experience a crushing one-point loss in our fifth-grade league championship game. The boys fought hard, just couldn't get that last shot to fall. But look, the learning experience, character-building opportunity, and you know I'm all about the bounce back, baby.
That's right. McMahon is, sidelines as a fifth-grade boys basketball coach. His twin boys are on the team. And, you know, from what I understand, I don't know if you want to say that which of your sons got a last-second shot, but it was a tough ride home, I think, in the McMahon van today.
Tough ride home. But you know what? The process is right, and we have the talk. Michael Jordan's missed a bunch of game winners. Kobe Bryant. On and on and on. The pep talk was delivered. Also mentioned that the last shot of my basketball career was a missed layup that would have tied the state championship game with a minute 30 left. But listen, we've got enough painful experience right now. Let's talk about the NBA.
Absolutely. All right. So I got to tell you guys, I saw a couple of things this weekend that made me wonder what we're doing for the next couple of months. Because what I saw the Denver Nuggets do on Saturday night against the Lakers, not that the entire performance was unbelievable, but the game could have gone either way. And I think the Lakers were even ahead with maybe about 5 minutes left in the game. If at the very least, it was tied.
Mm-hmm.
And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was out for the game. Game's in LA. And the Nuggets just were like, yeah, we're going to win it now. And made like 7 or 8 consecutive plays at both ends without raising their pulse, took the Lakers down to their knees and left them up the side of the road. And, you know, it ended up being, I think, a 9-point game, but it really doesn't matter. Could have been 12, could have been 14, just totally dominated it. And it was so reminiscent of last year's playoff series in the Western Conference Finals, where the Lakers like looked like they were in good shape over and over, and the Nuggets were like, we're just better than you.
Oh, the Bronze Broom Series, baby. Most competitive sweep in NBA history is my man, Brian Vindy Vinthorst.
Well, this one was very competitive, but it left 0.00 doubt. And look, the Lakers are in 9th place or whatever. It's not like it was in doubt going into it. But like watching look, in this game, Michael Porter Jr. goes 10 of 10 from the field. 10 of 10.
Oof.
And, you know, you're watching Aaron Gordon, who made several back cut dunks down the stretch of the game, including one with about a minute to go, where the Lakers defended Jokic like perfectly. And it looked to all the world like he was shooting it. But no, he was setting up Gordon for a dunk. And
the dagger.
You say to yourself, how can you possibly let Aaron Gordon, who has, I haven't looked this up, but something like probably 112 lob dunks from Jokic this year. How can you let him do that? How can you let him do it? Okay, simple. What? How are you going to guard Jokic one-on-one? And then if you send two and then you rotate a guy to Gordon, on the back is Michael Porter Jr. It's a math problem. I'm watching this going, nobody's touching these boys 4 out of 7 in the West.
Probably not. And it was a Lakers lead, a 2-point lead, with less than 4 minutes remaining.
Okay,
Aaron Gordon hits the go-ahead three.
Which was a jaw-dropping
Holiday,
shot.
By the way, right? With yes. KCP out. And then it's a 16-4 run. That starts a 16-4 run to end the game. And obviously Joker's got his fingerprints all over it. Jamal Murray, who's one of the great clutch shot makers in the league, has his fingerprints all over it. And like, how do you let Aaron Gordon, you know, cut for a lob? Because Joker's got 35 points efficiently, and you've got no answers for how to stop him. And he's lumbering down the lane for what looks like another layup. And you're so worried about that stuff happens. And dude, Anthony Davis is a top 3 big man defender in the NBA. And there might be people who are upset that I said top 3. He's elite. He has no chance against Joker. He couldn't do anything with him in the finals, couldn't do anything with him the other night. And again, we've talked about this. I don't see anybody in the league who does have a chance to stop Joker. And that's why I think the only way you beat the Nuggets in the playoffs, if they are healthy, is if you outscore them. You're going to have to put a bunch of points on the board to have a chance to beat the Nuggets, because good luck stopping them.
I mean, couple things. One, with Anthony Davis, I think actually it's way more important for him offensively to have a good game against Jokic than defensively. You're not going to stop Joker, but what you can do is get him into foul trouble. And I think Davis is one of the few big men in the league that is capable of doing that. But he just, you know, he's got to apply himself way more than 17 points against Jokic. It's got to be way more impactful than that. Number two, I would say with the Nuggets now, it's come down to little things, I think, that they can find motivation in. And have you noticed this season when the Nuggets play the Lakers? I think the Nuggets beat the Lakers on opening night, which, of course, they were pretty motivated after hearing Anthony Davis talk about them in the preseason. Okay. Then I think they played in LA again. Was it Kobe statue night? I believe it was Kobe statue night. And I'm sure the Nuggets were looking to spoil that night. And what happens last night? It was about LeBron, right?
40K, baby.
Nuggets definitely gave him his moment, and then they spoiled that. So I think the next time the Lakers play the Nuggets next season, it should really be a dull night that is no giveaway or nothing, okay? And the other thing, too, I would say is you also saw who was in the house last night. If Novak Djokovic was in the house, and I don't think Joker is going to have a bad game in front of him.
He never has a bad game.
But I think he was motivated to play well in front of, you know, arguably tennis's greatest player of all time.
And arguably the best Serbian athlete of all time. And I say arguably, I'm sure I might be leaving some Serbians out. I can't claim to be that versed in their history. But Joker's got a pretty good chance to establish himself at the top of that list.
Man, you know, I think it was, don't hold me to this 100%, but I'm pretty sure it was right after the Aaron Gordon dunk. There was a shot of the Nuggets bench, and Michael Malone had turned and was headed back to the bench clapping. He was going to go sit down.
It was almost like
a Red Auerbach cigar.
Oh, yeah.
My work is done here, guys. Yeah. All right.
Hey, everybody.
When's the bus leaving?
Yeah, keep talking about the Lakers. All we're going to do is win the West.
They have a certain swagger when it comes to both LA teams. But the Lakers, man, that is a team that they never have a shortage of inspiration and motivation to play those guys. I think you saw last night, Jamal Murray, he loves taking the air out of that building. He absolutely does. And I think there was a video afterwards, you know, there's always a social video from the Nuggets of Malone kind of giving out the defensive belt of the night for the defensive player. But then he goes over the statistics to the guys and he points out guys who play well. And obviously pointed out Michael Porter Jr., 10 for 10, who's been playing great of late. And then Jamal Murray says, you know, 24, 11 and 6. And Jamal Murray acts like he didn't know his stats, especially the 11 assists. And he goes, and then he starts tapping himself on the back of the shoulder for a good job. So they get up for these. I mean, look, I think they might've gotten a little bored probably, and they were a little banged up before the All-Star break. And now they're on a tear. And I think, you know, obviously there was Joker had said he texted his teammates, or KCP had said, Joker had sent a text to them to say, get ready. Let's get ready. This is the stretch run now. Let's win it again. And they are motivated and fired up to do that.
Yeah, they have won six in a row.
And yeah, they stumbled into the break, probably kind of, you know, we're looking forward to Cabo or whatever. Having lost their last three games, they haven't lost coming out of the break, six in a row. And lo and behold, as we pod right now, they're in a three-way tie for first place in the Western Conference. And you talk about searching for motivation. Hey, home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs when you play in the Mile High City is pretty good motivation. When you're a team that went undefeated through the West at home last year in the playoffs.
Speaking of Cabo, where's Bontemps this weekend?
Well, it's one of those cities where they serve Pacifico and you go out on fancy boat rides with the beautiful sunsets.
I just know Bontemps is out of the country. And
Canada. I respect this. Every single picture I've seen on his wife's Instagram of Bontemps. Now, he did have a little RJ, Richard Jefferson vibe going with like three or four buttons unbuttoned, but that's not.
Oh, gross.
The man, I know. He said he was dressed.
Wait. Bontemps is on vacation right now. Like
he's at a family wedding.
But no. Bontemps had two Pacificos in hand in every single picture that I saw. Two.
Okay.
He was double fisted.
You can respect
okay,
that.
Timmy B.
Yes.
I bet you
does. It's good times. I don't know. How do you say times in Espanol?
Veces. Is anybody willing to take a bet with me? Do you think he did not watch a minute of Celtics Warriors from wherever he was at?
Oh, there's no chance. Hey, look at this guys. He's got it on his phone.
He was not watching it because we're going to talk about Celtics Warriors in a second. But yeah, Olm's like, Bontemps is on vacation as he's in Vegas.
yeah, right.
This is a one day trip.
It's just a one day trip. All right. No, I got you. You didn't cancel on us, so I appreciate that. So look, guys, I got hotel reservations in Denver for the finals. I'm not just saying that figuratively. I got them. Okay. And I do this every year about January. I pick my teams, you know, I know the finals dates. I don't want to have to worry about booking the rooms when everybody else trying to book them. I gotta, you know, when the finals get set, I'm working like 20 hours a day.
That's a preemptive Windy Sleep update. I like
Thank
it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I didn't have Miami on the boards last year.
had to scramble there.
Another place I got hotel reservations for the finals is Boston, Massachusetts. Now I had finals reservations in Boston last year too.
Hey, cute little six-game win streak that the Nuggets are on. What are the
11.
11 straight.
Guys,
I think the average margin of victory is like 92 points during that streak. I mean, wow.
Okay, they played the Warriors on Sunday. The Warriors had won 8 consecutive road games. It was the fourth game of a trip, but it wasn't a back-to-back or anything. There was a 5-minute stretch in the first half of this game that was the most that I can remember. And my memory's fading. I'm in my mid-40s now. There was a 5-minute stretch in the middle of this game, in the middle of the second quarter of this game, that was the most lopsided I've maybe ever seen in an NBA game. What the Celtics were doing to the Warriors, forget about the varsity and the JV. It was like a college team playing a high school freshman team. They did anything they wanted, anything. And they were doing it in every facet of the game. And it was, I mean, look, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were going to work. Okay, I think Jaylen Brown had 19 points in the first quarter. Tatum was playing absolute daddy ball on the interior, which is what you want to see from him. And then he was also making like 27 footers. But the Warriors were getting their butts kicked by Peyton Pritchard and Luke Kornet and Sam Hauser. Like those guys were flying up and down the court. There was one play, it was a 23-1 run to end the first quarter for the Celtics, where Kornet does the contest, but he did it in the lane, double hand block, yeah. And he threw like a three-quarter court pass to Peyton Pritchard, who beat everybody back and scored. Peyton Pritchard doing step backs. I think the Celtics made 14 of their first 23 pointers. I know that in the first half, the Celtics had 20 assists to one turnover. The mastery that they were doing and the way that they were taking the Warriors and just putting them in a headlock and just rubbing them like Nolan Ryan on Robin Ventura. Well, how many of our listeners will get that reference, McMahon?
Oh, all of them in Texas will.
One of the most iconic. Every year on the anniversary of that thing, it makes its way to Twitter. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Nolan Ryan and Ryan Ventura. Robin Ventura. And you will get it. A friend of mine who's a big Nolan Ryan fan, McMahon, has a picture of it autographed by both
of them. Nolan's autographed a few of those. By the way, Nolan was in his mid-40s at the time. So don't talk about the mid-40s like it's old. Nolan Ryan was still striking dudes out and whooping their butts when they didn't like it.
All you need to know is Robin Ventura charged the mound. Nolan put him in a headlock and bashed the top of his head about 7 times. The top of his head with his fist.
Oh yeah.
One of the worst decisions ever made by a player.
Well, Robin that's Ventura. What this first half was like. And like right out of the gates, the Celtics won the tip, went down, and the Warriors played like lethargic, and Jaylen Brown hit a three like in the first 4 seconds of the game. And I was like, not exactly a on their balls of their feet start for the Warriors. So maybe this was baked in at the end of a road trip. But
dude, I don't care how bad the Warriors were. You don't beat a team by 50 without. And by the way, shout out to Stats Williams and the Stats and Information Group. The third time this season, the Celtics have won by 50 plus. That is a first in NBA history. And I joked that the average margin of victory during this 11-game winning streak was 92 points. That's an exaggeration. It's 22.1 points per game. That is their average margin of victory during an 11-game winning streak.
That's wild. Bias,
it's the best ever for any team on a streak of 10-plus games. I mean, the Celtics right now are a historically dominant basketball team. And oh, by the way, Kristaps Porzingis didn't even play today.
Yeah.
A guy who's been, I don't know, second best player on the team, third best, one of their, you know, one of their key cogs. I mean, the Celtics, if you just look at the numbers, the Celtics are an absolute historical juggernaut right now. And they are clearly the best team in the NBA during this regular season. Now, I would still pick the Nuggets to win the championship. And a lot of that's just because I've got that much belief in Joker and that group and their ability to close out games. You know, we've seen it from them in the finals. We haven't seen the Celtics get over the hump. But I believe me picking the Nuggets would be a minority opinion if that series, if what looks like is almost inevitable happens and we get that series for the finals.
I think, look, they're regular season blowouts and sometimes you don't put a lot of stock into them. I'm putting stock into this one, but not most what this means for the Warriors, but what this means for the Celtics. To me, I felt like when I watched them in the finals that year, when they played this, when they played the Warriors, they just did not know. They were too young of a team to know how to win that big game at home, especially like when Steph Curry took over that one game and had that legendary game. And then in the regular season, you saw that when they would go to Golden State still kind of had this mental hold over them, you know? And I feel like today's game was basically, or Sunday's game was basically about, we're trying to basically get out from that. We're over that. We are not going to be, you know, you guys don't have this over us anymore. I think this is a game where they're able to get over the hump mentally against a team like Golden State. And who knows what they're capable of accomplishing from here on out. I am with you, McMahon. I do think that if they do face the Nuggets, I will probably be picking the Nuggets just because until someone stops Joker, I'm just going to keep picking Joker because they're starting five and their championship experience now. And Jokic, I feel like until I see someone beat them, I don't think anybody's going to beat them. That's the way it is. But the Celtics, I mean, what they're doing now feels like Golden State with Kevin Durant. That's what it feels like.
Interesting that you say that, because with this win today, the Celtics' point differential, you know, average margin of victory, has moved into the top five all time. I think they're at 11.4, and they're right next to the 2016-17 Warriors, which won fewer than 73 games, but when they did win, dominated, and of course dominated the Cavs in the finals 4-1.
So I mentioned that the 11-game winning streak, 22.1 point margin of victory average. Best of any double-figure winning streak. Over the last six games, 29.8. 250-point wins in that span. Plus, they blew the Mavs out by 28.
I thought the Mavs were hot, but that's no longer the case.
They've cooled. But that 29.8 average margin victory over a six-game span, that bumped the 71-72 Lakers down to second place for the largest margin of victory over a six-game span. That was the team that won 69 games, which was then an NBA record. So,
Was that the team that won 37 in a row? Was that the 33 next year?
I believe it was that year. Again, that was a 69-win season. So, you know, the quick summary of this is the numbers are telling us the Celtics right now are one of the best teams that has ever played in this league. Now, you don't get to claim that distinction without finishing off by winning the playoff series. But
that's the team that they beat today about that one.
Exactly. Yeah. But that is the level that the Celtics are playing at. And obviously their top six. And look, I didn't like the Porzingis deal. I thought it was kind of a wonky fit. This is why Brad Stevens gets paid a lot more money than I do. It's obviously been a great move. He's fit in phenomenally and give Porzingis a lot of credit for, you know, he's in a completely different mind frame than he was when he left New York and came to Dallas. He doesn't care whether he's 1A, 1B, the third option, whatever. The guy just wants to win and is happy to be on a dominant team. But the pieces fit together phenomenally. You know, the one thing I will say when we're talking Nuggets and Celtics, the Nuggets have an easy way to crank things up come playoff time, and that's stop playing backup centers. Aaron Gordon's your backup five. We saw him do it last year in the playoffs, and that eliminates their biggest weakness, where The Celtics don't necessarily have that simple switch they can flip. I'm also not sure what the Celtics' biggest weakness is. It's a lot more difficult to find one.
The Celtics had the largest halftime lead in the history of their franchise today. Again, against the Golden State Warriors, who were fully healthy. I think fully healthy. Oh, no, Andrew Wiggins.
Wiggins hurt, too.
Pajemski's hurt. I take that back. And it wouldn't have mattered.
And Steve Kerr basically said it. He basically said, hey, we're flushing this one. We weren't beating Boston today.
He flushed at the half because he put the starters on the bench to start the second half. Joe Mazzulla started his starters in the second half. And they extended. It was the biggest lead in the history of the team. They extended it before they finally, I don't know, waved the green flag, whatever it was,
until they pulled out the victory cigar. Come on, it's Boston, baby. It's the victory cigar.
Yeah, and then
they lighted that thing up.
The Celtics were, Celtics fans had nothing to do, so they just started doing the wave, which you don't see very often in NBA games because the game's usually more competitive, and if the home team's winning, the fans go home. But they didn't want to even leave. They were just so happy to watch that, and it was a mastery that I've rarely ever seen. And by the way, so they ended up going 15-24, I think, in the first half on threes. The last two or three that they put up were wide open. Like they could have put up 90. It wouldn't have taken, you weren't far away from seeing a 90-point first half against the Warriors.
Do you think Tatum should be considered a legit, has a real chance to win it, not just be fifth on the ballot MVP candidate?
You guys know how I feel about Tatum. I'm a huge, huge believer. When you have a team that's this talented and a checkered history in the playoffs, fair or not, I mean, he did get hurt in that game 7 last year against the Heat. I don't know how much it affected him. He went to the locker room and came back. I don't know. He was playing with an injury the year before in that series in the finals where he kind of disappeared. I don't know. I just think that weighs against him. His team is so good. And his playoff history is checkered. I think it's sort of the inverse is normal, which is, you have to win at the highest level. The regular season, the Celtics have already done that. They've already been the number one overall seed. So he doesn't get the proper credit. So I it's hard for me to, I believe he's like, I have said that this could be the summer of Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
We could get to mid-August and say that Jason Tatum is the king of the world. Last year, it was Jokic was the king of the world. Jason Tatum could win the NBA title this year and win the Bill Russell Trophy. You can see him. I've said this. You can close your eyes and see him holding one in one, Larry O'Brien in one hand and Bill Russell in the other. July 1st, he will sign the largest contract in the history of the NBA. He will go past Jaylen Brown. He's already qualified for the Supermax. They're going to offer it to him. It'll be, I haven't seen the numbers, but it'll be 320 whatever million. And then he's going to go play for the U.S. Olympic team if he's healthy. And he could win the gold medal and, lose. None of those are assumptions other than the contract. The contract you can assume. Oh,
yeah, I'll go ahead and make that assumption.
But, he could end up having one of the great runs we've ever seen. That's all sitting there on the table for him right now or not.
So Wendy just did a whole lot of praising, but the answer to my question was
but no.
Yeah. No, and I agree. I've said he's a second tier superstar, which people think is like some kind of insult. To me, that just means he's in the discussion for the fifth or sixth best player in the league and not the first. But I agree with everything you said.
And I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
I would say this. If Boston continues to dominate like this and totally runs away with the Eastern Conference and obviously the NBA's top seed, and you throw in a couple big detonations from Tatum, I mean, I think to me, he creeps into my top three.
Well, you know, whether
I gotta put stock in, like, if this is an all-time season for the Boston Celtics, and if they really are going to continue this level of like Golden State KD domination, all-time domination, how can I not put him in my top three if he's the best player on the best team?
Well, you got a chance for a detonation on Thursday night because that's when the Celtics visit the Nuggets. And if there's one blemish on the Celtics resume right now, it's that they are 2-4 against those top teams in the West, including having lost to Denver at home and having lost to the Clippers at home.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Very big game that actually happened in the NBA on Sunday with the Clippers traveling up to Minnesota to face the Timberwolves. I don't know if you were at the game that they played a couple of weeks ago where the Wolves came in to LA and whipped the Clippers by 20. And I'm pretty sure PG was healthy for that game. So
yeah, I mean, this is a team that's had their number, but not just had their number, just has looked dominant against them and have kind of trolled them as well. I mean, Anthony Davis has said on the court too, I think Kawhi, he was caught overheard or caught on film saying it. And then I think when they left Crypto after that game that you just mentioned, they were laughing it up and kind of like the overall feeling was that Minnesota felt that the Clippers were old. They're old and slow and Minnesota has no problems with it. And I think they like that matchup. Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, he never shies away from saying what's on his mind.
Yes. So, and, you know, I think obviously a ton of swagger from him, but I thought it was eye opening to me. I was like, man, he calling Kawhi old, you know what I mean? Well, to his face. So that to me is real interesting. And I think the Clippers,
Kawhi
definitely
is not
that
old. I know
pocket.
he sometimes acts like he's old, but he is not that old.
Well,
he's like,
and
he's not like 37. Right?
He might say old, but they're also wise. And if there's criticism of Ant and it popped back up again in this game down the stretch, wisdom is not always the way you would describe his play in crunch time. And there was, you know, he had a couple of pretty big blunders in crunch time today. You know, one, it's a tie game. He drives and he just kind of throws the ball.
Well, we haven't even said what happened in the game yet.
But... Oh, my bad. I'll tell people. The Clippers won.
I just want to sort of set the stage here. The Clippers have had a couple of bad losses recently. Mm-hmm. I know Paul George was out for a while, missed a few games with a knee injury. They lost recently to the Thunder, I believe, at home. They had that loss to the Wolves.
They lost at OKC.
Oh, at OKC. And then just disastrous. And I don't think PG played in that game, but disastrous loss to the Lakers last week, blowing a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter. Basically, LeBron got, you know, scorching hot from three, but it's not a good look. And it was technically on their home floor. That makes it even worse. So they go up to Minnesota, and, you know, it's an important game for Minnesota. Minnesota had a loss on Friday. Ant Edwards missed the second half of that game, and they lost in overtime to the Kings and had a real winnable game slip through their fingers there. Yep. So they get the Clippers come in, and it is an absolutely rock fight game, a game that you don't normally see. The Wolves tend to play more defensive struggles. Neither team broke 90. Game came
it was
down.
The style of play when New Edition was popular, right? I mean, this was mid 90s basketball. Hey,
that's my kind of basketball. I love 90s basketball.
Season, a team won without scoring at least 90 points. That's the kind of game. 89-88.
You're talking to someone
that's halftime score in today's league. Are you kidding me?
You're talking to someone who used to cover Knicks Heat battles, and it was blood ball back in the 90s, and I loved it because I meant every possession meant something at the end. Yeah. Let me set the stage for you here. The Clippers have not been playing their best basketball since they returned from their Grammys trip on February 7th. I think that at one point they were just alternating wins and losses, and they lost like I think, 5 of 8 games right before and coming out of the All-Star break until they beat Washington, which started this now 2-game winning streak. But what was more disturbing about the way they were playing, defensively, they couldn't stop.
By the way, the Clippers won by 1. We haven't, we've kind of delayed announcing that. Yeah. Go ahead.
They won 89-88. But prior, like, they had not been playing well defensively, and you saw it in the Laker game. Yes, LeBron's greatness did come through in that fourth quarter, but they also allowed him to outscore them 19-16 in the fourth. He had 5 threes, but they weren't stopping anyone, really. Mm-hmm. They also, when they got into the paint offensively against these long, athletic, wing-type defenders from like New Orleans or Minnesota or Oklahoma City, Sacramento defensively, and even the Lakers, who give them problems with their length, obviously Anthony Davis inside, it's like their offense just becomes stagnant. Every time they drive into the paint, either the ball just like gets knocked out of their hands and it just delays things, or every shot at the rim is either rejected or it's challenged. Against Oklahoma City, at Oklahoma City, the first game out of the All-Star break, in the third quarter, Oklahoma City blocked them 7 times. And it felt like it was 14. That's what it felt like in that game. And they ran away with that game. And so the Clippers knew they hadn't been playing well. And then they lose Russell Westbrook with a broken hand against Washington on Friday, which I think is, you know, I know he's a polarizing figure. I think that's going to hurt them because they need his energy and hustle.
He's a key rotation player. I'll give him that, regardless of what you think.
The reason why it might also hurt them is because Bones Highland's now in their rotation.
Bones is going to have to be ready. But like, I think they're going to miss that energy hustle because they're on many nights, they are an older team that does not have that juice, especially when they play like coming up in a weekend or two. They're going to have a back to back at home where they play 12 o'clock games in both games. It's like 12:30 and 1 o'clock. They are terrible in those type of matinee games where they actually need somebody to Russell Westbrook. And Russell Westbrook actually had been playing good defense, one-on-one defense, probably the best defense of his career. But this game right here signifies to them they can play the defense that is expected of them. They held Minnesota to 88 points. This is a very good defensive team for them. Now, they fell behind. I think it was like 16-2 in this game. I think that at one point they were down like 30-15. Norm Powell came off the bench and saved them because he scored 24 points, but he just kept hitting a flurry of threes, including one at like, I think the end of the third quarter where he banked it in. That was absolutely monstrous for them. But this shows them, and it shows Ty Lue, they can play the defense that they are supposed to play. They can be engaged. They can be like, they can care. They had not been locked in for a long time. And also, they can overcome an 0-for-10 shooting game from James Harden, because James Harden had 10 assists tonight. And I think they're like 17-2 or something like that when James Harden has 10 assists or more. So they are able to overcome a bad offensive game because they can lock in defensively.
First time in Harden's career, he played at least 25 minutes and didn't have a bucket. The other thing, though, is this kind of is why you are hesitant to believe that the Wolves are a real bona fide contender, because they are a flawed offensive team with, as talented as Anthony Edwards is, he's a 22-year-old who is learning to be a go-to guy, and it does rear its head in crunch time. You know, as I was trying to say earlier, he had a terrible turnover where he drives and he kind of jumps up in the air and gets caught and just tosses the ball out. And basically, he should have been credited for the assist on Norm Powell's transition windmill, because Powell runs down the loose ball and he's off to the races. You know, he missed a three. I didn't think it was a great shot where, you know, he's off the dribble. It's a contested three. And then game on the line, they're down 3 with, I don't know what there was. I think maybe like 13 seconds.
They had a timeout. They had the ball with a timeout, like 13 seconds left. Assume they drew up a play for a 3-pointer in the huddle.
Yeah, and look, the Clippers did a great job of denying Ant a good look, and then Cat a good look, and Ant got the ball back, and then he drives for the dunk with 3 seconds up. And the problem there is not that he took a 2, it's that they burned 10 seconds with only 13 or so to go. And all the Clippers did was inbound of the ball, threw it down court, Kawhi taps it, buzzer's gone, and that's it. So again, the Wolves ranked 23rd in the league in clutch offensive rating. They ranked 21st in the league in overall clutch rating. And like, Conley is the guy who calms things down, but you're going to want the ball in the hands of your best player. And Anthony Edwards, he's not, you know, one of these guys who just kind of is this natural basketball savant. He's an unbelievable talent. He has absolutely no fear, but he's 22 and he's learning what it's like to be.
By the way, just to make the record clear, here's what Ant said about the last possession. That I really wanted a three-pointer. Finch was like, take the two if we get it. But I wanted the three, so I was trying to get the three. I tried to turn around and hit Carl Towns, but his man was there. Really bad read by me. And Finch said they had a couple things going on in the final sequence, but it wasn't to go for a quick two. That's not what they were looking for.
Yeah.
So
let me backtrack to when I said that with the last time they played in L.A., where a couple of Wolves were heard kind of like, you know, laughing it up. That was a writer named Justin Russo who wrote about it and saw that. I will say this. Yes, Tim, you're right. Anthony Edwards is a guy that's still figuring it out. I think to a certain degree, Carl Anthony Towns is still figuring it out too. He started this game on fire and then did not finish that game well. During the struggles of the Clippers during this last like 8-9 game stretch, Paul George just kept saying, look, we're a veteran team. We obviously want the number one seed or the highest seed we can get. And even Kawhi Leonard said this, as long as we finish in the top six or out of the play-in, and the whole thing is we got to be playing well going into the playoffs. They feel, because they're a veteran team, whatever the matchup is, they'll figure out a way, like tonight, to today's game on Sunday. That was the type of game where basically they felt like, okay, you guys blitzed us in the beginning. It looked bad. I mean, it looked really bad. And then they come back, and now they're in the thick of it. And now all of a sudden you see the Wolves looking a little uncertain, and these guys are looking confident, the Clippers, because they've been there and they know they've got Kawhi. And they feel like any series, I would say, they're probably not going to admit this, but outside of facing Denver, Denver is a problem for them because of Jokic, of course. But I think they feel like any other matchup, even if it's Oklahoma City, who's had their number, Minnesota, even though these matches may look bad in the regular season, I think they like their odds in a 7-game series because they have so many veterans and so many experienced all-time future Hall of Famers.
Well, it was a great win for the Wolves. I'm sorry, it was a great win for the Clippers. Tough spot for the Wolves, but my opinion about the Nuggets and the Celtics doesn't change based on Sunday's results. But it was a really
good you will not be booking a hotel in Los Angeles for the finals.
I do have a hotel booked in Los Angeles. Yes, I do. Those are the three places I have them booked: is Los Angeles, Denver, and Boston. Because
but all he's think, got it booked for the Lakers.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. That I do.
Oh,
not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I do not.
He's got those purple and gold pom poms, baby.
Yeah. We'll be speaking about a purple and gold reference here in just a second when we come back.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. So on Saturday, LeBron became the first ever member of the 40,000 point club. I don't know if there'll ever be somebody who will join him. I hope there is, because it means we see another absolutely unbelievable score. I hope we see it in our lifetimes. There are seven guys who have hit 30,000 points. LeBron, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Karl Malone, Kobe, Jordan, Dirk, and Will Chamberlain. And so I thought maybe, actually, I think it was McMahon's idea.
You can take credit.
What guys do we think could join the 30,000 point club? I don't know if we can project anybody's making 40,000.
Nah, we're aiming for 30. 40s. All right. I agree with you. I'm not sure we'll ever see another one in the
All
40s.
Right. And I'll just say the layup, Durant is in ninth on the scoring list and he's got 28,300. He should get there if he stays healthy by the end of next season, he should get there.
Yeah, that's the win, not if. So right. there's your layup.
So just to be clear, the only other player in active who has over 25,000 is James Harden, and he's got 25.
Two more. Harden and his teammate, Russell Westbrook.
Oh, that's right. Russell Westbrook. He put his nose over it.
Yep, both of those guys. 25,098 as we speak.
Both of those guys have 25,000 points. Okay. McMahon, Who's a guy that you think can get to 30,000?
Well, you mentioned those two, and I would bet on Harden, although I don't know that it's a sure thing. I do think he's got three more good years left. And then, you know, if maybe he'll need a little bit more, but I think he'll be around long enough to get over the hump. I would bet against Russ because he is going to be a bench player the rest of his career. And I'm not sure how many more years he's going to be in the league. So the other guy I'll throw into the conversation, you have to, Steph Curry. He's at 23,258. He is in his mid-30s. That jumper is aging awfully well. And I do think he's got like four more elite years and then some, you know, so probably some time to go. So I would bet on Steph getting there.
I think Steph's going to get there. I don't think it's that risky of a bet as long as he stays healthy. And then I would say if the NBA keeps the rules the way they are and the way this offense is and everything's geared towards scoring. Now, I don't know, you know, maybe they think everything's geared too much to scoring and it's punishing defenses and maybe there'll be another rules change down the road. But let's just assume that this offense and this scoring stays the same. I like Luka, dude. I mean, the way he scores points, and I don't care if he ends up leaving Dallas in a couple years from now and goes to another team and has more talent on his team. I think the way Luka scores points and if he plays and has a healthy career, short of him just saying, I'm sick of basketball, I'm going to retire, I think he can get there.
I agree with that 100%. And he'll pass 11,000 next week. He just had his 25th birthday a few days ago. And the only thing that would have held him back was a lack of durability and, you know, missing a bunch of games. Because that's the thing about LeBron. Like, obviously, it's talent. But he was so durable for so long. And he's still playing at such an elite level 21 years in. And to Luka's credit, he has taken conditioning and diet and all those things very seriously, hiring his own staff that travels with the Mavericks. So I think he's a pretty strong bet.
So I looked up how many points Giannis has. Giannis has turned 29 this year.
I just landed on him right now.
How many
18,099.
That's not as many as I thought he would have.
That's another 12,000 points.
And he is a absolute score. He's become an absolute scoring machine. I don't see him slowing down for a long time. And I think he wants to play for a long time.
Mm-hmm. 29. He's 29.
Yeah.
I'll say this. He has more points now than Dirk did when Dirk turned 30.
Okay. But Dirk
now,
was
Dirk equipped with... scored. Obviously, Dirk aged awfully well as a 7-foot shooter, first and foremost, who he was more athletic than people want to remember back in his day, but he didn't. You know, Giannis just overpowers and out athletes people on a consistent basis. Although, I'm sorry, the guy.
I mean,
his ball handling is extremely skilled for a 7-foot physical freak.
I can't believe I'm saying this because I think there are many nights when we see Giannis and the ability that he can score and get to the rim is very easy, right? But when you compare him to Dirk, when Dirk developed that outside shot, scoring for him became easier and less taxing.
When Dirk like developed Giannis, one legger, when Dirk right. could abuse people in the post,
right?
You know,
when he can score on people in the post or scoring people outside any way he wanted to, it's just less taxing than Giannis having to get to the rim all the time. And if Giannis has to score another 12,000 points, having to always try to get to the rim, I don't know. That's going to wear him down. You know what I mean? He has to find a way to be able to get.
He also doesn't
easier.
Make free throws well. You know, and
well,
you know.
All right, but you know what? The man averages over 30 points per game, and it ain't the first season that he's done that. I would bet on Giannis.
Two other guys who are active who are over 20,000 points are Dame Lillard and DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan has 23,000. Lillard has 20,000. Lillard is 33.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That 10th, you know, he needs 50. He's only two-thirds of the way there. I don't think so.
Durability's become an issue, obviously. I would bet against both those guys. And look, not that there's any shame in finishing your career.
There's seven guys all time.
Yeah. I mean, there ain't a whole lot of 25,000 point scorers. I think they'll both get there. I don't think they'll get.
You know who's not far behind Giannis is Anthony Davis, 17,289. Paul George, I think, is at 17,549. So that's
neither one of those guys is getting there. I think we got to, you know, you tapped into the younger generation with Luka. I will note, obviously, he's not going to add to this for the next 3 or 4 weeks at least, but Trae Young's only about 600 points behind Luka. So, you know, same draft class, obviously traded for each other on draft night. I think you've at least got to consider his possibility. He has, until this finger surgery, he has been very durable. You know, I don't necessarily know if you like the odds of that continuing because he is just small. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, generally, the guys who are smaller don't tend to age as great. Now, I say that Chris Paul is still out there playing at a reasonably high level. So, by the way, speaking of scoring and the rare air, you know, LeBron Saturday played his 1,205th consecutive game where he scored in double figures. There has only been 7 guys in the history of the league who have 1,200 double-figure games in total.
Well, by the way, playing 1,200 games in the NBA means, like, period, means you've had a great career.
I mean, that's a record that's not going to be broken. I saw today that Al Horford became just the 6th player in history to have 14,000 points, like 8,500 rebounds, 3,400 assists, and 1,200 blocks. They drew that, those boxes and weird numbers. Yeah. But still, the idea of, you know, being able to score, rebound, assist, and block, you know, the Wemby, basically, is what we're talking about here. So I wondered how many blocks LeBron had in his career, because he's never been a shot blocker. He's got 1,100.
Except for the chase downs.
Well, yes, the chase downs.
He's got 1,100, and 990 of them are chase downs.
Right.
By the way, you know, he had 2 chase downs in the first half against the Clippers, and that the chase down always is a barometer to me of like, ooh, LeBron wants us tonight. And he had 2 in the first half, and I remember thinking, like, I remember asking some Clippers people, I'm like, don't you guys hear him coming from behind? Can't you feel him coming from behind, let alone hear him stomping as he's coming from behind? Yeah, and then he did it to Jordan Poole, like, the next night.
He had another one against the Wizards.
And I was thinking, like, why don't people try to, like, you have to dunk it. You can't just lay it up. Jordan Poole actually tried to dunk it, except his problem was he cocked the ball back. And when he went to cock the ball back, LeBron caught him. But I'm just like, don't these players, I mean, he's done it a million times. Don't you feel him coming from behind?
Because, again, just in the spirit of Wemby, what he's been doing, you know, people were like, oh, my God, LeBron's got 40,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 10,000 assists. He's also got 5,000 steals and 1,000 blocks or 1,100 blocks. I mean, you know, the counting stats for LeBron are pretty wild. Are we missing anybody? Is there anybody?
Yeah,
I've
got a few. And one of those is Wemby.
Okay. I mean, it's a little early.
I thought about Wemby, too.
It's all about projection here, but he's 1,100 points and change into it as a guy who is 20 years old. You know, obviously people are going to wonder, is he going to be durable? I know this. He's going to do everything within his power from a work and science and preparation standpoint.
Absolutely.
To maximize his chances of being able to stay on the floor. He wants to be a legend, as we've talked about recently. Even if he loses athleticism as he gets older, man's going to be 7'5" with shooting touch, and he's going to develop skills. And they're going, like, I believe he will play with great point guard play for the majority of his career. The Spurs need to find that sooner than later. But, like, if you're a great point guard over the next 15 years, Victor Wembanyama is going to be a guy who's going to be attractive to play with. So I would bet on Wemby. And then, do you have any other guys you want to throw out there as guys you'd put down?
I mean, Shea just turned 25.
Yeah,
right?
Shea is the other guy that comes to mind. I mean, Wemby, my concern is San Antonio going to play him all the time too and not rest him in certain games and things like that. I tell you one guy that I
decide how often he rests as this.
I tell you one all-time great and MVP that I don't think will get it there, but it's not because he can't do it, is Nikola Jokic, who's at 13,585. As I look at this, just because he will be with his horses way before he gets close to 30,000 points.
And he's, while he can score, I don't think he's ever a guy that's going to average 30 plus per game, because he would rather have 17 assists and 34 points. Let's talk about Shea real quick. He's in that same draft class as Luka and Trae Young. I mentioned Luka's almost at 11,000. Trae Young's at 10,300 and change. Shea's at almost 8,400 right now. And obviously, because of they were protecting his health and their lottery position for a couple of years, he missed a lot of games during the 2 years of a total that was total rebuild time in OKC. You know, he ain't missing games now, and he's in the second straight year where he's averaging 30 plus points per game. And he does have a game, I think, that's going to age well because, like, he is quick, he is athletic, but man, he scores like Luka, by the way. He's scoring off of footwork and skill as a finisher and you know, the ability to just make plays after he picks up his dribble. And I do think that's something that'll age well and give him a chance.
He's over the last two seasons, he's played about 130 games, and he's averaged 31 points in those two games, and he's 25.
Yeah.
Granted, the NBA could pass some new rules that allowed the defenders to tackle perimeter players, but short of that, I don't see him slowing down on that
note. Well, and he gets to the line a ton. Which
that's right.
That's part of work stuff.
I have a little quiz for you guys as I look at the scoring list of all time. How many points do you think Joel Embiid is at?
He's missed a ton of time. It's like, it's like 11,000, 12,000.
Well, that's good. McMahon, 11,919. Very good.
Yeah. He's not, hopefully he'll get to 20, but he's never going to be a guy. He might never be all NBA again simply because he might not play 65 games. Now, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's not going to be like a historic all-time scorer.
No. Shea, you mentioned getting the line last 2 years. He's like, he's like averaging 10 free throws and shooting 90% on them.
Yeah.
So,
and he's about to have a second straight year of scoring more than 2,000 points. You start stringing those together, and that's how you look up and you're, oh, he's 20 some odd thousand. He's knocking on the door 30.
Yeah.
Got two guys in one draft class that both have a chance.
All right.
And he guesses who? One of them celebrating a birthday today, Sunday.
Jason Tatum.
Jason Tatum is not the leading scorer in his draft class right now.
Hmm.
Do you know who is?
I don't.
A rookie of the year runner-up.
Rookie? We're running out of time. Just tell me.
Donovan Mitchell.
Ah.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell, and again, this is Sunday afternoon, 11,471. Tatum, 11,408.
He's not playing on – Donovan's not playing on Sunday, so.
Okay. So I think both those guys are going to have legitimate shots. They're both scoring. You know, Tatum's had a 30-point-per-game season. They're both scoring in the high 20s. Donovan's starting to have some durability issues. He is.
He missed his 13th game. They say a knee. It might be a quad. He missed his 13th game of the year on Sunday. And, you know, he's a guy who would make all NBA, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's
flirting
with the 65. He doesn't need the all NBA. He's not supermax eligible. So he's not incentivized. I mean, I'm sure he wants to win all NBA, but he's not incentivized financially to do that.
I'll say this. Donovan is short by NBA standards. He is not small. He is built like an NFL running back, just with, you know, super wingspan. He plays at 228 pounds.
Yeah, he's also become a better shooter as his age.
I can see him scoring for a long time as he stays healthy, even like in his like mid to late 30s. If he keeps playing, I can see him scoring.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then Tatum, 6'9", three-level scorer, you know, a long-range shooter with playmaking skills. I mean, like, I like Tatum's chances. And then there's two other guys who I think at least are candidates that are active right now. One, we just got done talking about a lot, a 22-year-old who's learning on the job as a go-to guy, but he doesn't miss games. He's an absolute tank and an incredible talent. I'm talking about Anthony Edwards.
Yep.
6,400 in change points right now. The other one, and this is a guy who he's had some durability issues. He just suffered a pretty nasty ankle turn Saturday night. Talking about Devin Booker, who seems like he's been in the league forever. I think he's still 27 years old, though, only 27, and he's over 14,000 career points.
I don't think he's getting there. I don't think he's getting there because I don't think he's ever going to want to be that type of guy. I think he's always going to want to distribute a little bit too, but I could be wrong.
Well, he's distributing a little bit this year. What's he averaging? He's averaging like 28 a game.
Well, that's true. By the way, Bob Pettit's 43rd on the list, McMahon, 20,800 points. Hey, in a moment here before we go, I just want to pass along the condolences to Chris Mortensen's family. Just really sad news that we got on Sunday at ESPN. Got to know him a little bit. I remember one time sitting in the green room in Bristol and watching him work a story. It was a big story at the time, and it was really awesome to watch that. I'll never forget that. So too soon for Chris Mortensen. I'm so sorry that the last decade of his life, a lot of it was spent, you know, fighting cancer. So, but thank you for watching, listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Ohm. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. And we will be talking to you next week.
Adios, amigos.